All right, give us that. Okay, we still have 3 minutes to go
for
starting time.
Okay, we can do that. I'm good.
Great. Unless you want to start early. Well, in case somebody else, you know, it's just like very
punctual.
You can hum it for us, Brian. We're getting closer. I think we'll get started for our council meeting for Manti City, March 4th, 2026, 6:30 p.m., 50 South Main Street. We welcome all of you here. Thank you for being present. And we have full council, Brian Francois, Jen Christiansen, A.J. Maurer, Mary Pipes, Megan Johnson, and our city manager. We appreciate you all being here. And our recorder, City Manager Jason Brand, reporter Matt Gray. We will begin with a prayer from Mary Pipes, and then A.J. Maurer will give us the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our Father in Heaven, we're grateful to be here this evening in this beautiful city of Manti. So grateful for the opportunity we have to serve the citizens of this beautiful place. We thank thee for the people who are here and who work for the city, those who volunteer for the city, and we pray tonight that as we make decisions, we will be able to be guided by the things that are best for our citizens, for our employees, and for all of us that live here. We pray that we will be able to think with clear heads and to make good decisions. We are so thankful again for the blessings that have been poured out upon us. We especially pray at this time for rain and snow, as we are in such a shortfall this year. We pray that that will bless us, that we will be able to have adequate and to spare for the season ahead of us. We love thee so very much, and we say these things in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
All right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Our first item on the agenda is declaration of any conflicts of interest for any of the items on our agenda this evening. Anything noted? Okay, thank you very much. Item number two is the approval of our council meeting minutes from February 18th, 2026. Were there any corrections to note? Everybody okay with them? I will then accept a motion to approve.
I'll second that motion.
Motion made by Jen Christiansen and seconded by Brian Francois. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes. Thank you. Item number three on our agenda, we have Phelan Warnick here to address the San Pete County Chamber of Commerce report.
Hi.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So I don't have much of a report as far as the chamber's doing well. We're doing great within in the community, and we've been growing. But mostly what I came to tell you about, Jennifer asked me to come and let you know a little bit about what we've been doing the past few months. We started a project in Ephraim. We call it Square One. We were able to work with Ephraim City to get a space there. It's the old granary building that's right next to the co-op building. And they are allowing us to use to lease that space. And we're making a incubator space for businesses to come when they're in their beginning stages and kind of move from that very beginning stage of their business and go through a program where they can kind of grow. If they have any kind of like trouble spots within their business, we can kind of help them with that, kind of encourage them to go from maybe their garage or their house to Main Street. So it's kind of like a stepping stone for them. Along with this, there's an education element, and we're working with Snow College, the SBDC, and the entrepreneurial program at Snow College as well. So we've worked all together with Ephraim City to get this program together, and we're in the process of building that right now. We don't have it quite ready yet, but it is in the process of doing. We just got the grant for it, so it's almost done. So we're hoping that within about a month or two that we'll have that ready. But in the process of doing this, we realized that there is a really big need for office space. And so many people have told us at all different levels of business that they're having a really hard time finding office space. Not just the ones that are starting their businesses, which there's a need for that as well, but there is a need for office space at all different levels. Jen had approached me about the space that the building,
the Bishop Storehouse.
Yeah, the Bishop Storehouse. And possibly doing something there, and similar to what we were doing in Ephraim. And I haven't seen the inside of the building, but from what I understand, it's already set up that it could possibly just be offices inside of that building. And I thought that maybe that was something that we could possibly do, and maybe just rent out those spaces for offices, similar to what we're doing in Ephraim, to possibly bring, you know, better economic development within this area, not just in Ephraim, but, you know, encourage it throughout the county. So.
May I ask, when you are talking about office space, is it office space for businesses that would eventually be retail, hopefully, or is it just office space that they do long distance computer work or attorney office, or what kind of thing are you looking at?
Mainly it would be, you know, it's all different kinds of office space. A lot of what the office space is maybe somebody that had been working from home that realizes they don't want to work in their home any longer, that would rather have an office someplace on Main Street. Or maybe they just couldn't find an office space that really has, they have a business that they would like to, you know, have an office. Maybe not necessarily retail, but just, you know, maybe a lawyer or you know, any other kind of business that could utilize just an office space, even just a remote office. Maybe somebody that works up north for maybe 3 days of the week and works here 2 days of the week.
And just a quick comment, let you know that Manti City is shortly going to be advertising for some office space here in the building. Up front where we used to be in our office when we moved in the back, we're getting ready to prepare to rearrange some office space here that we'll have some that we'll be advertising shortly.
That would be, I can let you know of a couple people that have been looking, so especially in Manti. So
send them our way.
The space that we have, we're going to have a flex space as well, so not just the people that are going through this program, that we'll also have a place that people can just come in and use it for just a few hours. So there'll be a Wi-Fi bar that they can come in and just kind of utilize and come in and out. I talked to Chris Talbot and about the space, and I got the impression that he wasn't very excited about our idea of what we wanted to do there. He didn't completely rule it out, but he didn't seem to be concerned about the economic development aspect as more as he was more concerned about the optics, is what I kind of felt. So I don't know exactly what I think there was other people that were possibly looking at that space, so I don't, where he had the ultimate say, I don't know if that would.
My goal, I was really hoping Faye Lynn could bridge that gap we had between the courts and the city and come to some sort of partnership for that space.
Yeah.
Because it's a beautiful space, or it was a beautiful space, and, you know, could be a great asset again for Main Street. And a partnership like this, I thought, would be right in line with maybe the state's thinking, because they could use it if they needed to. Yeah. For conferences or a meeting for a lawyer or whatever, and it would be available for people in our community. But once again, he was not very open to discussion so far.
Like I said, he didn't rule it out completely, but he didn't completely seem very open either.
That disappointed me.
Well, it helped when we contacted our legislators before.
Yeah,
the last
that's
time.
What I brought up to Faye Lynn. Maybe we push from Troy, from Darren, from somebody.
Yeah, I think if we let him know that there's, you know, an economic need.
What the chamber is doing is a huge benefit to this county.
Yeah.
And if we can help them here and help us at the same time.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm willing to help and do what I can. And the chamber is willing to do what we can. I don't know if this is a perfect fit, but even if I can help advocate for a good fit, I'm more than willing to do so.
Yeah.
So I would like to see.
You would definitely want to utilize your resources.
Oh yeah.
That's kind of, if not you use him, he could use you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe
do you know if it's been cleaned up after that last tenant?
Yes, they did say he did have somebody in there.
Yeah, he said that they had done some renovations since the last tenant.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Does anyone else have questions?
And also, if you have any questions about the chamber, is there anything that you would like to know about what we're doing or anything else?
Nope, you guys are doing great.
Thank you.
We appreciate whatever assistance you can provide to us.
Well, just let me know. I'm more than willing to help in any way. So.
Thank you very much for coming and making that presentation.
Thanks.
Next on our agenda is the discussion of the accessory dwelling unit. And McKay, we'll turn the time to you to give us an update, our city planner, McKay Mielstein.
All right. So we'll just go over some brief changes that have been made from the old accessory dwelling unit code to the new. Jason, do you have the slide here that's a little simpler than the poll that I sent you? While he's pulling that up, I can kind of get started. There we go. Thank you. So on the left here, you can see the existing ordinance for accessory dwelling units and the proposed ordinance changes on the right. And I'll go through them sequentially just to make sure that everyone's on board with what the changes are quickly. So the beginning is a proposed a purpose section. It was very long and lengthy, and so we shortened that down a little bit. You can see that on the right and left here, point 1.1 proposed section. Number two is section C. This, in old or existing ordinance, primarily talks about a language of what type of structure can be turned into an accessory dwelling unit. That language has been maintained but moved to a separate section just for difference in flow of it. So again, not too much yet in change. The next two sections, section K and L, very much the same. The language is to ensure the ordinance is connected to short-term rental ordinance, which we'll talk about momentarily. And then section L is language of ensuring property utility hookups for ADU. Both of those were changed for flow and clarity as well. So not too much change yet. Those have just been moved around. A lot of this structuring, or a lot of this has been restructuring of the ordinance just to make more sense. But sections G through J, which in the existing ordinance outlines the meat of the ordinance of setbacks, height restrictions, all of those restrictions are there, have been added to since. So now those sections include sections G through K in the new proposed ordinance language, and you can see highlighted in blue are some of the new sections. Section G, we added language outlining the creation of an accessory dwelling unit. This includes converting existing living areas inside a home, adding to the exterior, like an addition to a home, and converting it into an accessory dwelling unit, and converting an existing accessory building on the property. Those are the three main sections now. Section H added attached accessory dwelling unit language, just kind of expanded on that since that it didn't discuss a lot of those changes in the existing ordinance. And then I is detached, and section J added conditions to be met for a second story detached accessory dwelling in the language. That's one of the biggest changes in this ordinance language, is that we would be allowing second-story accessory dwelling units, and that whole section outlines all of the parameters to make that happen. But again, this is a broad overview. The proposed language is in your packets and specifics there, and I can answer questions about that. And then section K added conversion of existing outbuilding language as well. So if there's an existing building on the property, it discusses exactly how to go about converting that to accessory dwellings. So broad strokes, that's what the ordinance change entails. Are there any questions in depth from when you read the ordinance?
I might have some. Is this on? Hello?
Yes.
I don't think so. Is it on? I don't think it's on.
No, it's not.
No, they're not on. I'm going to talk real loud then.
Yes.
So I just have a few questions about the language that was in it, just for clarification.
Yes.
In section C, it talks about that the owner has to live in one of the units, which is in the thing. But if the owner moves off the premises, can they still rent out the ADU? Like, they're like, okay, I'm going to be moving to St. George for a year and a half or whatever, but I want to keep renting out my ADU. Can they still rent out the ADU if they're not living in the other one? They're not selling it to anybody. They're not renting it out to anybody else. they just aren't going to be on-premise.
And that can be language that's more clarified. From what I understand from the Planning Commission, their intent was that they wouldn't allow it because they want to maintain a primary Manti resident in charge of the accessory dwelling.
Okay.
That is something that we
So maybe we need to just put something in there that you have to, I mean, if they go on a vacation, that's okay. But if they're like moving for an extended period, maybe we need to say if you're going to be gone for more than 3 months or 6 months, come up with some,
and
just for clarification.
That's a good point, because the spirit behind this point was that most of the time if someone leaves, they will rent the primary residence and the ADU.
Right.
What they prefer to do, and that is something that we've expressed.
That we don't want to do, right. Okay, then in D, it talks about on-site parking space for each vehicle associated with the accessory dwelling unit. Are we saying one car, two cars? What are, I was just a little unclear on.
For now, and this is the same language in our existing ordinance. It's just one car space. So one car extra per.
Okay, one car extra per ADU.
Yes.
Okay.
And we only allow one.
Let's see.
One extra space.
Okay, never mind. I'll hold off on that one. Let's see. Jay, what did I have? On J, on number 4, it talks about windows, second story windows.
Yes.
May face walls of principal buildings or side rear property lines adjacent to commercial or non-residential properties. What's the definition of a non-residential property?
So this is something that the Planning Commission also debated, this specific wording.
Okay.
Actually, and in this point, the intent was that windows wouldn't be facing
somebody else's house.
Else's house.
Okay, so if it's a commercial property or an industrial or something there, or
yes.
a field
and
like an open field, an agricultural
park.
Exactly.
Okay.
And
a school park,
something like. Okay.
And we even discussed schools and parks as well,
okay.
for the same reason that people wouldn't want someone to be living out.
Okay. And then I only have one more.
No, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say it is technically possible to have residential in a commercial area. So
right.
That's why we just said not like a residential space.
Got it. Okay. This is just me reading through it, going, if I was looking at wanting to do this, would I know what it was saying? Okay, the last one I have, it's on number K, on the conversion of existing outbuildings. Number 4, it talks about balconies. Balconies facing neighboring residential properties and this kind of thing. And it gives all of the stuff. What if an existing build does not have a balcony, but they wanted to add a balcony? Because I know if you have a new build, you can put a balcony as long as it's facing the residential property that belongs to that. But if there's an existing building and they want to build a balcony, is it okay as long as they do the parameters where they doesn't face anybody else's property?
Yes, they would follow that. Yeah.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Anyone else?
So on our new construction ones, I was trying to read in here. And I've talked to Jason a little bit about this, but are we planning on connecting right to the home for the utilities? Are we running new for new construction?
So like, are you saying for a detached?
Yeah, for a detached.
Yeah, so, there we go.
Somebody hit the
button.
We
got it
done.
All right.
Nice to meet you, AJ. Usually the utilities come off of the main utility, so you won't bring in new utilities to your property for an ADU. They have to be secondary, in the same way that for any accessory building would be.
Yeah, one of the things I want to look at, is the impact of a single ADU that could have on the city's utility systems. I mean, for example, if you build a 1,000-square-foot ADU, then you potentially could have 2 to 3 bedrooms, 2 to 3 bathrooms. In essence, you're creating a whole home. And so all of that water, sewage goes into the system, which is not being
metered.
Not necessarily being metered, but not necessarily being impact. The impact, the impacts need to be looked at proportionately to, I think, the main dwelling, because it will have an impact on the system.
Yeah.
I'm primarily worried about our sewer system on that and what impact an ADU will have.
I'll do some research and see if there's any precedents in other towns and see how they measure the impact. I think that would be very helpful for us to understand. I'm assuming most of the time cities don't boom with all of a sudden a bunch of accessory dwelling units at once. They trickle in, but we still have to figure out what capacities that we have on the grid. Okay.
Well, and then the language would be applicable to anybody in the future until the ordinance would change. And so I think even if you didn't think it was going to happen right now, it could be a significant impact if you had that happen. I just wanted to ask about the height, because in our accessory dwelling we have a 20-foot height restriction. And I noticed that there was a 30-foot on part of the language here.
Okay, I did a little bit of research on this. And one of the purposes of this is to support the economic viability of historic properties and the city's historic preservation goals by allowing accessory dwellings in historic structures. And when I did a search of how tall is a typical two-story house, it's anywhere from 20 to 35 feet, depending on the pitch of the roof. I know there are a lot of historical properties in Manti that might be potentially be able to turn into an ADU that could possibly be 30 feet tall. And so I think 30 feet is not necessarily adverse to what we're trying to accomplish. I don't think, because that would only apply to existing buildings that are there. It's not like if you're building a new one, it can go 30 feet. That one has a cap of 20, I believe it was. And so I think the number of them that possibly would be 30 feet are not going to be astronomical, but I do know there are some people who have these older barns. I have one. I'm not sure how tall it is. It's probably taller than 20 feet, though, because it's a two and a, it's about a three-story barn. And if I had $1 million, I could put a foundation under it and turn it into an ADU, but it would definitely be taller than 20 feet. So I think, I don't think it's going to be problematic simply because it's only going to exist conversion of existing outbuildings. And because most of those outbuildings would be historical in nature, I don't think it would be out of line.
All the historical barns I'm aware of, if the wolf that was trying to come and get the three piggies, one whiff, they'd be dead.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, you'd be surprised, though, because I've got this one, and one of the walls is leaning out a little bit, but I've had two contractors look at it, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's not moving. It's been there for over 125 years, and it's not going anywhere. It's solid. It just looks scary sometimes. But, I mean, with all the wind that we've had and everything else, that thing never moves. And it hasn't moved for 125
years. So you're going to turn it into an ADU?
You know, if I had $1 million, I totally would do that, and I'd live in that, and I'd rent my house out. Yeah, absolutely. But I'm sure that it would be taller than 20 feet. It might not be 30 feet tall.
I would just be interested in knowing realistically what buildings we have in town that would be legitimate potential targets for conversion that are over, that are accessory buildings that are over that height. I'd be interested.
If we don't have that many, it doesn't matter then.
If we don't have that many, 25 or 30 feet, you could
put nothing on it because there's nothing taller than 30, I'm pretty sure. I guess I'm saying I don't see a problem with 30 feet.
If it's already existing, absolutely.
I don't see a problem with 30 feet. It's not like there are going to be 500 of them in town.
Right.
And if it can meet all of the other things, it's got to have the right setbacks, it's got to have a foundation, it's got to be able to pass all of the building codes and everything else. I just don't see that that we should have an issue with it being 30 feet tall. That's just my feelings.
I will remind the council that the main goal of accessory dwelling units is to be accessory. This was something we tried very hard to do as a planning commission, as a city planner, to make sure that these buildings don't overshadow the main primary home. So that's just something to keep in mind as well.
Right.
30 feet is most likely going to be the exception to the rule.
And exactly.
To make sure things make sense.
Right.
But it just as a reminder, we try to keep these accessory and not to make it into a two-home lot.
Right, and if they are doing a new one, then it has to be subservient to the original home. Like
correct.
If the other one is not, then they have to keep it within the parameters, so there will be accessory, not primary.
Any other discussion on this, or any other information that you have, McKay?
That's the gist of it, unless you have any
okay.
questions.
If there are no more questions, then we'll have you address us on agenda item 5, short-term rental ordinance discussion.
All right, this one will be a lot shorter because we currently don't have a short-term rental ordinance, so there's nothing to compare it to. This has been discussed in council at least once before, and so just going over one of the requested changes from the council, section number 7, changed the limit of total number of short-term rentals to a 300-foot radius from existing short-term rentals. This was changed from the four-quadrant idea before to 2 per quadrant. So this allows a little bit more realistic spacing without seeming to cluster different
right.
short-term rentals around certain parts of the neighborhood. So that's the main reason. Along with this, non-owner occupied short-term rentals are also only allowed to be established or built at a minimum 500-foot radius from existing short-term rental. So this again, the idea behind that is a lot of times if there's someone from out of town doing these, it's a little bit of a different situation than someone from inside town.
So explain to me how you have an owner-occupied STR.
So this usually, short-term rentals can be rented out periodically when they're on vacation or something
oh,
like that.
Okay.
That's kind of the idea. As well as someone who owns the property in the city. So maybe they own the adjacent property to it.
Which also people rent out their basement.
Yeah,
or above
well.
Their garage.
Yes, or above their garage, like an accessory home. So that's the idea behind it.
Okay. Any questions from McKay on this?
I got two things. I'm sorry. Not really.
Count on you, Mary.
Okay. Number 4, it talks about disturbing the peace. It's 4B. After 10 p.m. or before 6 a.m. Is 6 a.m. a little bit early? Do we want to have that be 7 a.m.? That they have to be quiet till 7 a.m.?
Yeah, they're up partying all night.
I sleep in, guys. You know, and anyway, I'm just throwing that out there, and you guys can say what you think.
Does that parallel what we have for our noise ordinances?
Oh well, if
I believe so.
Okay,
yes.
Then I won't worry about that. Then we're good on that. I'll pass on that one then, but on 4D, when it talks about animals roaming and stuff like that, and you got to keep them under control, can we put something in there about that they must comply with all Manchester City leash laws?
Yes, we can.
Okay. So, that I mean, it's fine if they want to bring their pets and stuff, but they should comply with our ordinance. Like if you're going to be walking your dog, please keep it on a leash. And that's all I have on that. Okay. Maybe let me check.
I have one. How do you determine the radius? At what point are you measuring
so,
from?
Usually we find the geographic center of the parcel, which can be done on a GIS system or our mapping software. And then you create a buffer, and it mathematically figures out that buffer. There's more complicated ways of finding that. We found the simplest way to do it is just a 300-foot buffer, just to keep the language simple.
So that would result sort of maybe in a maximum of 1 per block?
That's the idea, 1 to 2 per block, depending. But yes, the idea is at least on the street front that there's about 1. And maybe there's some on the other side of the block, perhaps, depending on how big the property is.
Thanks.
So as I look through this, I do appreciate the time and stuff that's gone into it, but I think we've missed one main point that we actually started all this is how big of places can they have. I didn't see anything in there, but when you have two
yeah.
Greyhound buses show up to a facility,
yeah, that's true.
That interrupts your neighborhood, that interrupts your residential You know, I mean, we've always had the curfew and things in writing, but that was the main thing why we even started this conversation, is to talk about how many people can stay in an Airbnb.
Reasonable.
And as I go, I look back through some of the minutes and notes, and then I start looking on the county's website, and they have outlined, let me just look right here, they have a residential built excessively for or converted to maximum number of bedrooms is 5. And after that, it's considered a hotel. I think we need to address how big we are going to go. Because like I say, when I go to my house and you pull up and there's two buses, it's a little concerning. And then what goes on in the neighborhood. So that's what started all this whole thing, was that
issue. And that's a good point. And what the Planning Commission found, the short-term rentals are notoriously difficult to manage and regulate, because just like if you were to rent a hotel room for 2, you could bring 4 or 6 without anybody knowing. So no matter how much you try to regulate, people still do that regardless. So I think, as far as I understand, how the Commission tried to manage that was all of the other noise and curfew laws. Just even if there is 5 or 6 people more than you want, at least you wouldn't notice that, if that makes sense. And so we can write it in there. I think that is definitely a possibility that we can look into.
Well, and I think it is hard to enforce, but 5 people aren't going to make a difference. I mean, we go to Airbnbs all the time and you end up having another family come over. When you start having literally 40 or 50 people show up,
correct,
your residential area is not residential anymore. It's loud. And there's a lot of more traffic, you know. So not that you can enforce it or babysit that, but if it's in writing and you see a lot of people showing up, then you can say, well, wait a minute, you know, because some of them advertise, they'll say 40, 50 people, retreat, you know. So I know at the Palisade, we had a big retreat out there, a family reunion, and we got called out on, you know, out there in their HOA, but I think we need to address that somewhere in this ordinance of, you know, maximum 5 bedroom, because it turns into other problems, I think.
Or maybe what we do is we come up with some kind of a definition of lodging, so that there's a difference between a short-term rental and lodging.
Which I believe we have something similar to it. We talk about lodging in some of our other ordinances, and I can look into that.
Okay.
I know we have a limit of 30-day stays. And
right.
How many people.
Yeah.
So it might be something we can even just put into here, but I will continue that. So
thanks. Appreciate it.
That's good. Thanks for bringing that up, AJ, because that is what...
That's what
that
sparked
moving
this whole thing.
Yeah. Yep. And that would be good.
Do we currently have an STR that exceeds 5 bedrooms?
We did have.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That was the main situation that brought to light.
And there are a few really large homes that if someone from outside decided to purchase it and turn it into
a on the market.
Yeah.
So one in particular.
Right.
Room for a swimming pool.
So I think we just want to prevent problems coming from the future.
I mean, one thing that you could consider, and I've seen this done in other cities, is just cap the total number of people that could stay in a location.
Yeah, despite the rules.
Despite the rules, you just say, this is the cap, this is the max.
Well, isn't it a fire hazard at some point?
There's an occupancy per square footage requirement by the code.
So maybe we'll just make that a little bit more clear, all of these points in this.
And make sure that it applies just to SCRs, because some people have large families and we don't want to be infringing on that.
Well, and that only happens every so often. When it happens day after day, that's where the problem is in your residential community.
Absolutely. No, I totally get it.
I mean, I love my neighbors having parties, but every day getting old, not knowing who's is a problem.
Thank you. Any additional questions, comments? Thank you, McKay.
Thank you.
Appreciate the information. Moving on to item 6, water.
Or lack thereof.
Yes. Corey and Jason, will turn it over to you to talk about outdoor watering for the coming season, since we're already nervous about it.
Well, we all are aware of our current water situation. If you look on the drought map for Utah, this was the end of February. We're smack dab in the middle and one of the worst areas of the state. Hopefully we get some reprieve the next couple days. But as we look ahead, Corey and I discussing, you know, what do we need to implement to help soften the blow for outdoor watering as we come on a short water year. I know Corey has been in touch with the irrigation company, and you know, we're curious to see what regulations they may implement. And I think things will happen right from the start of the irrigation season with what looks like the river's flowing. So I just wanted to pull this map up and show you and then just discuss some of the things that I've just jotted down as far as regulations, requirements, restrictions, whatever we want to call it. And I just, with Corey's assistance, we put together these 17 points for review. So one of the things I hope residents understand is that the water system belongs to them. They really are the owners of it. And it's up to them to do a good job of maintaining and keeping the system operating sufficiently. Now, there's a large percentage of the community that has secondary water from the irrigation company. And there's a large contingency that is growing that does not have that resource that will use culinary water. And especially now as we're looking at a water treatment plant and the cost of that water significantly going up to be utilized for landscaping, I think there's some measures that we need to look at, especially on a dry year like we have. So just some of the things that I've jotted down are drier lawns and parks, pastures, they're okay. Grass will come back. It's okay if it turns yellow. One thing to implement is you could reduce garden sizes. You plant grass at your own risk. If a water restriction comes into effect, your grass could die. Implement xeriscaping, water-wise planting. No sprinkling between 8 p.m. and 9 a.m.
No, that's the only time you can water.
What's that?
That's the only time.
Sorry, just no daytime watering.
Yeah.
Sorry, no daytime watering. I wrote that twice, and the first time I wrote it, it didn't sound right, so I changed it to what I have here. Decreased water usage, you know, set your clocks, manage appropriately the water that we do have. Cycle and soak, raise your mower decks. It's okay to have longer grass. Some people like to have a golf course type landscape, but it's okay to have longer grass.
Actually, your roots go down as far as your grass is up, so it's much better for water.
I'm aware of an individual that waters his lawn 3 times a year, and his lawn looks just as good as anybody else's, but he's properly watered it to where his root system is very deep, and pre-fertilizes properly. That's one of the items we have in number 16, it's fertilized properly, and stretch the water resource that we do have. It's going to be incumbent of us as residents and business owners as we move forward that water scarcity could be a very severe reality. Trees, you know, we're worried about trees. We need a deep water, water tree roots instead of lawn if it comes to that. You know, don't let your trees die. It's okay that the grass dies, but don't let your trees die. Those are a concern that I would have. Adjusting your sprinkler heads, you know, just maintaining the system. Your lawns, you know, fix your leaks. You know, this is also part of the city's requirement on all of our landscaped areas. And supplemental water, if we have to use a well to pump into the system, those costs have got to be passed on to the users. So just looking at all things considering, just want to have a discussion on what you would like to see us be prepared for. Because I think we're just 1 month away before irrigation season starts. And how do we address that as a community?
I think one of the... Is this on now? Is it off again? Okay. One of the biggest things we need to do is, as a city, we need to make sure that we're doing what we are asking other people to do. Because I know a lot of people have complained that they drive past the cemetery and the sprinklers are on at 10 a.m. and it's windy. And the same thing with some of the other city properties. And I don't know how to explain that to them. But I think we need to be conscious of what the city is doing with our own properties at the same time.
Agree, Mary. Agree.
I was just going to add, before moving here, having spent the last 34 years in Arizona, these are, whether it's a good year or a bad year, these are just a good rules to live by, just to be good stewards of water. Just because you have a plentiful year doesn't mean that you just go crazy and spend all that water on that year. You want to try to limit the use as much as possible. And all of these things just make sense for a healthy lawn and like I said, being good stewards of our water. None of these things I'm here to say, turn your water off and don't do anything at all to keep anything alive. These are just measures that will help reduce the waste of water. So I think they're great.
And if nobody's ever looked up that conservewater.utah.gov site, it's got really good information about how often you should be watering and stuff. Sometimes we think, oh, I got to be watering, you know, 3 or 4 times a week. It's like, no, 2 is plenty, even in July. So it's got really good information on that. That's that bottom one there.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to add that.
The weekly lawn watering guide. Yeah, that's perfect.
Are we sending this out to citizens?
I think we should send this out, get this posted sooner rather than later. So if there's things that you want added onto this, I've invited Corey here. He and I have discussed this at length. I know we discussed it with the irrigation company, and we don't know exactly what they're going to implement. But I'm certainly going to be implementing some regulations.
So, Jason, for the secondary water, if you violate whatever they've requested, they have the ability to come and turn it off. If you're watering with culinary water and you are watering in the middle of the day when it's windy, then what are the consequences and how do we deal with that?
I mean, obviously we approach those property owners and we discuss them with them. The best thing to do is to have a conversation. You know, if they can't see the value of having that turned off, and then, you know, you hate to go to severe mandates, but I think most people have common enough sense that they could follow these guidelines. You know, you might have 1 or 2 instances. You know, I know that's where all this implemented from Saratoga Springs, from the outdoor water metering regulations, mm-hmm. You know, in 2019. So we just need to be cautious. I don't like to use the word restrictions. At some point, I know some communities have said, okay, you can't water unless it's an even or odd day. You know, but I think if we can educate individuals, common sense should apply. You know, don't water in the wind. Just makes sense. Now, you might have your sprinklers set for the time to come on appropriately in the night. And hey, it might just be windy. You're asleep. You don't even know it, right? But there's some common sense principles that will make our water go a long ways. Now, What I worry about, and I think Corey worries about this the same, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, with a shortage in the secondary system, the desire for residents to use culinary water is going to increase. Therein lies our challenge, right? Truly the only way to regulate water usage is through a rate structure. the more you use, the more you should pay. So, it's, I mean, gratefully, we have a secondary system for most of the community. And that stretches our culinary water resources further to benefit the residents. And that's all we're trying to do. Correct me if I'm wrong, Corey.
No, one thing I want to add to this, just if we can get everybody to understand how, I guess the easiest way to say is normally or always you don't run out of water, your flows decrease. So if the town can match the flows that the mound's providing, therefore it's not like we can capture all the spring water and hold it up there and keep it up there and save it for a better day. The water's going to come down either way. We're hoping it comes down at a good rate, but we're hoping town can match that rate that it's coming down at. That's the point of this. So, you know, if 5,000 gallons a minute is coming out of the mountain via springs and the creek, and town can use 5,000 gallons a minute, that's a good ratio. Now, what happens is if flow decreases enough down to 1,000 gallons a minute and town is using 5,000 gallons, there's a problem. So if people can take Jason's advice through this letter that he's worked up and match the rate coming out of the mountain, the water will go further. You won't see it going down the creek to head to someone else, but we won't be exhausted because Jet's reservoir that accents our springs, we don't control how fast the water comes out of Jet's. It comes out at the rate it comes out. The springs flow the rate they're going to flow. I don't go up there and turn them down to slow down and hold it back if I can. So that's the thing is Jason's right. He's hit the nail on the head. If we can reduce, if it's 1 day a week or 2 days a week, you take off your timer in August, you're down to watering one time a week or two times a week, and we're matching the flow coming out of the mountain, we'll be fine. It's just when people think they need to hoard all the water down here and keep their lawns extremely green. I mean, because the city, we do have, and I've talked to our guys extensively about this lately, we have a kind of a balance we have to meet, because with the cemetery and the ball fields, you've got a revenue-generating facility, and you've got the cemetery, an emotional facility. And so we try to do our best to match what we say we're going to do, but also keep them in a standard to a point. You know, there's going to be dry spots. There's going to be grass that looks a little rough. We're going to get chewed out by lots of people. But the reality of it is we just got to try to match what is coming out of the mountain. So I think Jason's on something really good with this. The irrigation company, I told him, we usually kind of reiterate what they say for outside watering. This year, I think we're gonna support them and reiterate what they're saying, but we're also gonna have our own, which we've never really done before. We've just kind of said, if they say no watering from 10 to 6, we say no watering from 10 to 6. If they say only water twice a week, we say water twice a week. But I think Jason's taking a good proactive approach in trying to help people understand, you know, that fix your sprinklers, don't water the road, you know, don't let it run down the gutter, don't let it run all night, things like that. If it's raining, turn them off. You know, that buys you a week, even in the hottest times of year. So we get a good rainstorm, you can shut your sprinklers off for at least a week. So anyway, I just want to tell you kind of how the flow of things works.
Thanks, Corey. Very good.
You shut them off, we just wouldn't have any water. Not like I could hold it somewhere for August.
Mother Nature will hold itself back.
Yeah.
Any other questions or discussion for the watering?
Was this shared with the irrigation company?
No, Corey and I have talked about this. We do want to share that with the irrigation company. You know, we're not trying to step on their toes, right? Because honestly, these principles apply to whether you're using culinary water or secondary water.
Yeah.
The principles are the same. We do want to support the use of what resource we do have and to put the water to the most beneficial use.
Any other comments, questions?
I'm just glad.
Anything you want to add to this? I mean, I just finished out.
I'm just glad we're getting going on it, because we're always in the middle of summer and we have to put restrictions or whatever you want to call it on the water system, and then it affects the culinary. So, no, I think it's great that we're being proactive. And
one more thing back to what the mayor said about if we find abusers on the culinary side, including myself, if it's one of our employees, the talking to them, we have a really, we've only shut one house off in all the years I've worked here for having a problem with them, because water is a necessity. So shutting someone's water, culinary water off in his early days, that's a tough call to make, because, you know, they got to have water. Now, can we try to do something with their outside watering? Yes, so we will be trying to monitor.
And certainly conversation is the best way to go. But if somebody just blows you off, then I think maybe a fine, I don't know.
Yeah, you hope it doesn't come to that. You hope people just listen to logic.
Right.
But I think most people will. 12 years with only one person, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and if we don't say it was wrong, because, I mean, someone's living in the house, and you just don't want to.
Thanks, Corey. I'm Jason. All right, next item on the agenda is the payment approval report, and that was included in the agenda for the bills. Any discussion or comments about any of that? I assume we have bills to sign afterwards, Jason?
We do.
Then I will accept a motion to approve and sign the bills following our adjournment.
I will make that motion that we do that.
I'll second it.
Mary Pipes made the motion. A.J. Maurer seconded it. And all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes. Thank you very much. Continuing business on the agenda. We discussed the short-term rentals. The public hearing is anticipated to be scheduled for April 1st. The same thing with the cemetery ordinance, April 1st to update on that. And accessory dwelling unit, again, public hearing for April 1st. Any questions, comments about any of the continuing business items? All right, we will move to agenda item 9, council member reports. Brian, we'll start with you.
Jason, I've got nothing tonight.
Oh, man. Hey, I'm just seeing who's reading. Sorry, inside joke, guys. Sorry, if you don't get it, that's okay. Just want to make sure Brian is reading this information.
That was really about as brief as you could get. Very good.
You really aren't going to say anything?
No.
No.
Okay. All right. Jen.
Oh, no. Okay, I have a lot to say. No.
Show maybe you should have put that comment on Jen, too. No.
I'm going to defer, though, a lot to Mary Pipes, because we attended the same thing,
yes,
right?
We did
water conference, which I love that conference. Just because we get to see a lot of what it takes to provide these services, water and wastewater, to our community, we get to see the inside stuff. And they have the workshops on the legislative updates and funding sources, and we attended a good one on cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
But after talking to our engineers at Sunrise about our water treatment plant, then we noticed there was a class on what's called SCADA, which is the data accumulation system we're going to implement with our new water treatment plant. So it was nice for us to see that, what goes into that, into this new plant, and so we kind of have a better idea of what we just spent $8 million on. So it's always good to see that side of the city. So, and then on the Legislative Policy Committee, this is the last week of the legislature, hallelujah. Ends Friday at midnight. They actually, a couple of our problem bills that have to do with property tax, and I haven't
got the update for today, but I'm assuming they're still dead. Yeah, so that's good. There's a lot of work that goes into trying to come to a balance between those bills, believe it or not, between our legislatures and the league, and the input from staff and council members to get those bills to be not so bad. And usually they do a pretty good job. I mean, I'm a taxpayer. I'm all for if we can lower property taxes, that's great. But there is a consideration of what that would do to a city budget. So it's nice to see those discussions and try to come to some sort of balance. But they killed it. So it'll be better for the city, so we don't have to be mandated on how we can manage our own budget.
Yeah.
I think it's the best thing. They leave it, leaving us that authority to manage our own small budgets instead of having the legislatures tell us what we need to and how to spend our money down here is always the best situation. So that's all I have. I'll leave the rest to Mary.
Hey, Jay.
I'll just say we went on a little field trip today to look at our future water treatment plant. Got to see it hands-on. I think we've spent our money well and excited to see our treatment plant come into system and be able to use all of our water instead of ship it down the river when it's a little foggy. So, yeah, it's a good field trip.
Thank you, AJ. Mary?
Well, just to tag on to what Jen said about the Rural Water Conference, this is the book they give out, and it's full of all sorts of information. And a lot of it was very, very technical. But Jen and I were able to go to the ones on, as she said, the water funding ways that you can get. There's like a bunch of different ways you can get funding for water projects. We went to one, talked about cybersecurity insurance and DEFCON and some free things that we can do, risk planning. And then, like she said, the SCADA one was really good. It had some really good. And then emergency response was another good one. Lots of things. My hat is off to our employees and all that they do. Oh my goodness, they're top of the line in my book at this point. It was really, really good. I have, this is for you, Mayor. It's on the Muffin Monster, which is a grinder that goes on your wastewater and grinds stuff up. And then there's one also on separation on screens. That screens out stuff before it goes into your wastewater. Hopefully, it will. It's the kind of stuff that can.
Hopefully, nobody uses flushable wipes.
Yes, that's the kind of stuff that it grinds up and stuff like that. So that's the kind of stuff that we got to see while we were there. It was fascinating. And I'd like to give a shout out to our own Jason Brown, who was elected to the board of the Rural Water Association of Utah. So kudos for that. And I didn't win the four wheeler. I'm pretty sure I didn't. I didn't hang around. There were like 50,000 tickets, and I had one, and I wanted to get home, so I didn't hang around to see. You had to be present to win. I didn't win it, did I, Jason?
Nope.
Okay. So we're good. I think that's all I have tonight. But it was really, really, really it was time well spent at that. First time I've been able to go, and I would definitely go next year.
Megan.
Nothing to report.
All right. Thank you. Jason, item number 10, administrative reports.
I just want to express appreciation to the residents of Manti, to the council for my request. If I got elected to serve on the Rural Water Association Board, I'm grateful that I can represent Manti City. Mm-hmm. And have a voice for rural Utah and strategic water issues in the state. This is a powerful board that can hopefully influence legislators. And it does put Manti on the map, and I'm grateful for that. And hopefully that will bring dividends to our community, which it does. I've seen that because Kent Martin served on that board prior to me and allowed me to replace him for his tenure that he voted in. I was really grateful because I've seen where people have
had several nominees come forward in an election, and one individual, I don't know who it was, he just said, hey, can we suspend vote voting? And,
do it by acclamation.
Yeah, do it by acclamation. Jason Brown, hey, I like that game. Anyway, that was an honor, and I hope I serve our community right by doing that. You know, the first day was all about being there to look at the conference as a whole. You know, generally the Rural Water Conference has, I don't know, 3,000, 4,000 attendees. And I've been attending that conference for 20-something years now. And I've seen it grow. And the information, the resources that are there. We had two guys, Lloyd and Kyle, go down and all week took the water certification course and tested on Friday. And sadly, we don't know for 3 weeks whether they pass or not, which is kind of a joke because it's multiple choice questions. In our technology today, they should have an answer that night whether they passed or not. And grateful for the guys who spent the weeks studying the manual. The manual's about that thick that you've got to know ins and outs of water requirements. And appreciate Corey allowing me to recommend sending at least two guys to our water certification requirements down there. It will help him as our public works director. And you know, just better our employees. But it's neat to see what a council member's perspective at these conferences are. You know, I go for the technical aspect of how to operate a system efficiently and properly. You mentioned SCADA. You know, we've already talked to our SCADA guy for who we want to operate our controls for the entire water system, for the future SCADA for the sewer system, and for the future SCADA system for our electrical grid. You know, making those right contacts is key for us, and just appreciate the council and allowing us and our employees to attend these conferences. If we could better our employees, that's what I'm all about, helping them make their job easier. And most of that is education and understanding and coupled with experience. Mm-hmm. So with that, I just appreciate that support. The other thing I wanted to bring to our attention is we currently have a contract with Sanford County Sheriff's Office for law enforcement. Sanford County Search and Rescue, the radio days, I'm not sure if the council has ever donated on behalf of the city for this. Wanted to know if the council is interested in the city donating for this. I might have to have a little bit more insight into what this actually is.
We've got somebody here
could actually help me understand this a little better.
Both can help us.
Hot seat.
You don't know.
Why you want the money? Sorry.
Yeah.
Personal reason. We're not in my chair, are we?
So I just think Jason's new to it and wants to know how it all works. So when he ends up in the Coke gel, with Big G.
When we have
to
do the Coke gel.
So this is the
standing
condition
that
the Sanford County Search and Rescue's done for almost 50 years. And it's just an annual fundraiser we do so we can continue to operate.
So do we donate a dollar?
Yeah. $1, $1,000, whatever. We don't ever ask for a specific amount, we just ask for
a donation.
What's your goal this year?
I don't know. They're talking about
more than last year.
So you're missing your meeting
more
right
than
now.
Last year.
Does Manti City usually donate?
I don't. They have.
Have they?
And they have.
Oh, okay.
Some years
okay.
they have, some years they haven't.
Okay,
so.
Fair enough.
Is that clear this month?
Yeah. And primarily, you know, if the council wants to donate, how much is that donation? And, you know, where do we draw the budget for that?
Yeah.
So I just need direction to the council on approval for a donation for the search and rescue. I go to $2 too, right?
Yeah, double it. Yeah, right.
To enlighten a little bit for Jason.
Pick on the new game, right?
No, I'm just so you're aware. So on April 1st, they take over the radio station and broadcast all day and donate. People call in and donate. It's a great asset to the community. A great asset to the community.
Do
you still do the Coke Jeff?
No.
No, not in the same way that it used to be.
But you can go buy it. You can buy swag. You can
it kind of just do a one-time rush to run for the season.
They have auctions. They raise upwards of. Well, it's their basically. It allows them to buy the equipment they need. It allows them to buy the, because everybody who's on search and rescue donates their time.
And their vehicles.
And their vehicles and everything else. And they've been able to buy a snowcat and other equipment that they need for emergency rescue. Because when there's a call out for search and rescue, they go. It doesn't matter if it's in the middle of the night, in December, during a blizzard. They will go. And you have to tune in to KMTI on April 1st because you'll never hear anything better or worse,
right,
depending on who's on. Jason, anything else?
Yes, I have lots of stuff.
All right.
I'm taking over for Brian tonight.
No,
it's
for him.
That's why he said be quiet.
He's not room for both.
So, as asked and reported back to the council, previous budgets for the pageant in previous years, as well as the Easter egg hunt. So you can see on the Easter egg hunt, from 2021 through 2025, the city contributed $1,500 as a sponsor from the Easter egg hunt. The council has selected 2026 to increase that to $1,800. I'm just going to point out that's a lot of dollars for a little bit of candy. No offense to the kids, sorry, for the deficit. But,
and question.
Exactly. Just wanted you to be aware of what that budget is, especially as we, in the next 3 months, specifically talk budget. Mm-hmm. And the misspent type expenses, roughly $2,200 was the 2023 expenses. This year they requested approximately, I think it was $3,500 to $4,000 for a budget.
Was that going to include updating the float? That budget that she asked for? I can't remember.
I think it did. No, it didn't include the flow, but it included some kind of one-time upfront amenities that we would need, accessories for the pageant.
So this year, I think we planned on in that budget that we got was a $1,000 scholarship. This one was only $300 2 years ago. Is that what I'm reading? Is that the scholarship money?
Yeah.
The $300?
Yeah.
I mean, because this year's the
2023 budget.
Yeah.
I do know the budget for the scholarship for this year was significantly higher.
Yeah. Right. But I think the difference a lot, just glancing at this one, is I think our scholarship actually is $1,000 total.
Yeah. I think we have 300. Four participants.
Yeah, four.
For the pageant this year.
Yep. But your scholarship, whether you have four
or
five,
still. So are they crowning all four?
I don't know.
Usually.
I think so, but I don't know. We'll have to figure it out.
I'll tell you the first runner.
But that's your. I think that's some of the biggest differences. Your scholarship.
Is a scholarship, yeah.
But, I mean, 300 to go to school, not much. 1,000 is not much.
No.
Yeah,
Brian, that's all I have for you.
Okay, my turn.
That's it, Jason?
That's for now.
Okay. All right. We will move to item 11, public comments. If you care to make comment, please state your name, address, and we'd like to limit you to 2 minutes.
My name is Ken Kelch, 490 East, 200 South. I appreciate the council talking about the water because it's going to be a problem this year. I know never seen 6 miles so low as in my when I was a little kid in the 60s. So what you've done is good, but I do think you're going to be impacted in the summer. In my case, I don't have enough pressure. It's been that way when I talked to Kent Barn before. Now that I'm here more permanently, yeah, I'd like to try to get that rectified at least up into our area on 200 South. There's no way I could water anything. And I have to have a pump, just a pump, that would necessarily get the pressure up to use my taps. So if we can look at that eventually, I'd appreciate that.
Is that secondary and primary?
No, secondary is not a problem. We won't have the water this year, I think. It's just my
no, but your pressure.
Primary.
Okay.
City connection.
Okay.
And I do appreciate the idea of utilizing the property that the city has to rent for office space, because that's something that I think others and myself would definitely utilize and make that more open and realize that it's an opportunity. That's what I wanted to
bring. Great. Thank you very much. Would anyone else care to make a comment?
Susan Manning, Manti. Sorry for the glasses. I have laser surgery today. I just wanted to let you know that Manti, Sam Pete Messenger, has hired me to do Manti City Council. And so I will always be very clear if I'm making comments as a person or for the newspaper.
Okay.
Thank you.
John Van Orman. 25, I think my address, 25 West 800 North Manhattan. I was looking at my notes. It's been a year ago that I presented to the city council about the ADU policy. And I just want to be the first one to say that I'm super grateful for all the progress that's been made. It's looking like a much better policy than what was here. It's been great working with the city planning and zoning. I don't know. I wish I had access to the document that McKay had. I feel bad that I didn't come prepared, but there was a couple things I wanted to bring up, and maybe you can confirm if it's still in there. One was second-story ADUs in a residential area have to have non-transparent windows, and I understand that. I really do. It's just, and this may, the wording may have changed since I talked to McKay, but just in case it hasn't, I'd just like to voice my concern there. I understand the spirit of it is for privacy and that you don't have as much control over people who can rent an ADU, right, compared to a primary dwelling. However, ADUs do have the same setbacks as residential homes at 10 feet, and residential homes can have second stories with no fog windows, and second story homes can have balconies that can exceed 5 feet. And there was something in there that said that second story ADUs couldn't have a balcony that exceeded 5 feet, and it also had to have a 5 to 6 foot non-transparent railing around the balcony. So like I'm almost 6 feet tall, so you'd have to build a balcony with a railing that's about this tall that no one can see through, which kind of defeats the purpose of the balcony. And I understand that so people don't, you know, hang out above the fence line to look over. But again, homes can have them, and they have the same setbacks and the same privacy concerns. So I'm really appreciative of that ordinance, and I don't know what the copy is that's in your hands, but just something to think about as a city council as to, you know, I understand the spirit of it, but in practicality, if we're not, and then short-term rentals, right, anyone can rent their home. You can build a second-story home with a balcony, with fog windows, and then rent it there as an Airbnb. But you can't have an ADU with a second story, or you have fog windows, and you can't have a balcony. Does that make sense? So I'm not trying to point out hypocrisy or anything. I'm just trying to see what, is it worth trying to regulate it that specifically when in reality every home could technically violate that same thing. Does that make sense?
Is that it? Thank you.
Comment. So again, I'm very grateful for the progress on it. I think it's an awesome policy. There's just a few things in there that I guess I had some concerns because it's obvious that they're applying it to ADUs, but it technically doesn't apply anywhere else for any home or anything. And I don't know if we should specify that much or if we should. I'll let the council decide.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I'm Paul Lund, 128 South 300 East. I came for the ADU discussion just later, I missed it, but
being addressed and being made a little easier and more in line with the rest of the communities around us. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Lisa, Norman, thanks for the consideration of it. Coffee. I appreciate all that you do. So I'm not going to say anything else about that, but I like to say every year, so when I come to things, that my road still doesn't have a street sign on it, and so it is unfindable on Google Maps. And I've heard that if we'll just put a street sign up, it will catch up eventually. If you feel like putting a street sign on 800 North, I appreciate it. It would make people find my house much easier. And I'm probably not the only one that would benefit, though. Thank you. Something to think about.
Thank you.
Just to follow that, we have got those signs. We've been putting up a ton of signs lately, so we'll try to move that as well as we can. I'm Sean Olson, 520 East Union. I'm the one that came to the council a couple years ago about the Airbnbs and the noise and everything that comes with it. I do appreciate the work that has come along with that over the last couple of years. But as AJ kind of mentioned, I do think that we've kind of missed the whole point of that. And from what I brought to council a couple of years ago, McKay had mentioned that it's kind of difficult to regulate the size of them, but if we look at zoning ordinances, like you can't put a hotel, you know, some holds 30, 40, even up to 50 people. I couldn't build a building in the residential area and then host that many people. And so I do like what AJ had mentioned about the county's rule of having a number of, you know, if you're over so big, like that can't be an Airbnb, and that only helps support the businesses that are the hotels that are in town as it is. And then another part of it, I don't think that going off of just curfews alone is going to be enough to curb the noise that comes with it. When we built our home there, that was not an Airbnb at the time. Claire Cox had lived there, and I don't even like being around my extended family that much. I don't want to be on everybody else's from May until Labor Day. So going off the curfews, it doesn't do anything to help the noise that happens throughout the day. I'm talking, you know, kids are up playing, you know, 7, 8 in the morning, and it has been going until about 3 a.m. That, obviously, that is no longer functioning as an Airbnb right now, but, I mean, you never know. I wouldn't want anybody else in the town to have to deal with that either. I think that going off the curfew, like, times alone isn't enough. Especially with that Airbnb specifically, I mean, people, in addition to the 40 people that they've had there, people were bringing fifth wheel trailers in addition to the people running generators all day. And so I appreciate, again, everything that everybody's done, and just hope that we can go back to the main consideration I have brought in addition to what you guys have done. Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate your input. Thank you.
Thanks.
Is there anyone else that would like to comment or public comment? All right. Then it is my item 12. There was a budget and finance training session number 2 this past Friday, which was excellent. And if you weren't able to listen to it, I'm sure that they'll put a link for the recorded session on. But a couple of things that I pick up from that, and Jason, certainly you know this, the challenge of expenses and revenues coming in at different times throughout the year and trying to match that all up so that we have balanced budget. But one of the things they said is that we have to educate the public about the real cost of services. And that is really important, I think. They talked about doing performance audits on some of the programs that we have and utilizing students that are in higher education to do that, especially when we don't have a lot of cash to pay for those kinds of services. And then they get credit for school, too, so that's a cool thing. They talked about some of the different revenue sources sales tax. And Jason, I don't even know, I should know what ours is, but they said typically sales tax provides 40 to 50% of local government's revenue, and I'm sure we're not even close to that.
No, when they talk about those types of revenues, that's for the general fund only. Our enterprising funds are completely separated
from
that.
Yeah, right. They talked about municipal energy tax and previously that known as the franchise tax. Anyway, they said make sure you look at your fees to make sure you're keeping up with inflation. And then it's important to look at those every year, that there has to be a link between the costs and the services provided, and you need to know the full cost of the service, even if you don't recover the cost. For example, swimming pools never earn for what their cost is. That's a service to the community. And I just wanted to say, in terms of the budget, thanks to Kent, who helped get things in order, and Jason, now that you're here, Jason and the staff, Matt, for continuing to monitor all this and keep us on track for our budget. Last week I attended the American Public Power Association meetings in D.C., and one of the big items they talked about was how critical, since we're talking about water, how critical hydropower is. And I went, they had a meeting, sort of a training session up on the hill regarding CREDA, the Colorado River Energy Distributors Association, and CRISP, Colorado River Storage Project. As I've mentioned before, they're really concerned about the levels of Lake Powell and Glen Canyon Dam, and they said the loss of Glen Canyon Dam, Glen Canyon resources, which would then require replacement by other energy sources, would probably cost us five times as much as what our hydro energy is currently providing. And it's not as clean, and that would result in some sort of scary rate increases. But they are, at this point, concerned that 2026 could be the lowest year on record. We went to the various members of the Utah delegation and talked to them about the need not to bypass the turbines with trying to put cold water down to help the humpback chub when the water levels are so low. That costs ratepayers $25 million, that experiment. And it's an experiment. They don't even know if it'll work. It's an experiment. And I think our board was all on, our legislators were all on board with that. We also spoke to them about the challenge of, it's called prohibited foreign entities on getting your tax credits for any of these energy projects, because if you're issuing bonds, municipal funding tools like that, debt bonds, it's almost impossible to track when third parties pick those up if it's somebody from one of those countries that is in disfavor, like China primarily. And they said, you know, if you're issuing bonds within the U.S., that ought to, you shouldn't have to track it any further, because that puts a real chilling effect on these new energy projects. I think that is it for me.
Wait, is that one more? Because I forgot to do it when I did that May 6th.
Oh, yes, thank you. The council meeting that is currently scheduled for May 6th, we have our R6 training. So we need to either figure out if we want to do it Tuesday. I'm sure they've already scheduled the buildings and everything with Snow College down in Richfield,
but
they wouldn't be able to change.
Budget.
When do we need to do our budget? Could we shift it to the second Wednesday in May, or do we need to do it that first week?
We do not need to do it that first week. It has to be submitted to the state by the 22nd of June is all.
Okay.
So we're okay.
So should we...
Yeah, we can do budget stuff prior to that.
Okay. All right.
If Matt pushes me, we could get that in April.
Okay. Because we will not be having council meeting that Wednesday, since we all need to be down at R6.
Right.
That's excellent training. So then we can... Do you want to decide now when you want to do council meetings, or do you want to postpone that and decide at our next council meeting that will be a little closer?
We can do that.
Okay.
Next time.
Yeah, sounds good.
Do we want to do a consensus about donating to the search and rescue? Do we need a motion? Do we need a consensus? Do we need a yes?
I would like a consensus of the council on what
to do. Okay.
In terms of amount, I think we'd probably need a suggestion, Jason, from you based on what's happening.
Any idea what we've given in the past?
Bitcoin.
How about $100 goes, it seems like a lot of people just do $100 other towns. I've heard on the radio or calling,
Okay.
And our name will be on the radio, right? Manti City and... You know, people know too, so I don't know. I'll throw it out there. $100.
That's good.
I'm good with that too. I think it's a great thing. But like I say, we're on a budget, and it is taxpayers' money. I think we need to at least contribute something. So
I'm good with that.
$100.
$100.
Okay, perfect.
Two.
Put us on the radio now.
All right. So
they kept the $2 to go on the end.
I believe that we have a couple of items that we need to again discuss in closed session, litigation personnel. So thank you all for coming, and I will accept a motion to move into closed session.
I'll make that motion that we move into closed session.
I'll second.
Motion made by AJ Maurer, seconded by Jen Chris Jansen. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, roll call vote. Megan?
Yes.
Aye.
Mary?
Yes.
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Brian?
Yes.
All right. Motion passes. Thank you again for your attendance. Appreciate you all coming.
I totally forgot to do that. We had a model.
I forgot too.
Oh, I'm just going to give it to you. So anyway, I got this information. So this is just
right.
But anyway, you can have that. So you're like, we're looking at for something to go down the our lagoon that would chew up, not just white, but anything.
But you want, not, I don't think anything chews up wives.
I don't know.
It just
clogs. And that's why they also have filters.
Yeah.
And then,